Well, it's really good to be with you again. We always look forward to coming out. It does rain every time that we come, but other than that, it's okay. And we enjoy so much seeing you, and not only seeing you here, but we enjoy seeing a lot of you at the Pepperdine Lectures every year. We appreciate your coming, being a part of that. And it's nice to see some familiar faces there as well. I think you probably know all about that, and I see that you've already got the booklets and so on, so I won't do the commercials. We'll just get to the word. You know, I first was thinking, well, what should I talk about? I thought, well, I think I'll talk about that parable that Jesus gave about the seeds and the soils, you know, how the sower goes and scatters the seed and it falls in various places, and the seed either germinates or doesn't, depending on the kind of soil that it falls on. I was thinking about that, and then I got stuck, though, on one of the soils and one of the seeds, and I never did get off of it. So I think for the first time I've ever given a whole sermon on weeds, I'm going to do that this morning. Weeds or thorns, you can pick, take your pick. But in the 13th chapter of Matthew, when Matthew is telling about Jesus telling this parable, he says he talks about seed falling in various places. He says other seed fell among thorns, which grew up and choked the plants. And then a little later on, if you remember in that chapter, Jesus explains to his disciples what the parable meant. And when he gets to that phrase, you find this in verse 22 of Matthew 13. The seed falling among the thorns refers to someone who hears the word, but the worries of this life and the deceitfulness of wealth choke the word, making it unfruitful. Or you can look at Luke's version of the same explanation. It just adds a few details when he says, the seed that fell among the thorns stands for those who hear, but as they go on their way, they are choked by life's worries, riches, and pleasures, and they do not mature. And I just started thinking about that, and I thought, you know, there's a lot in the scriptures and a lot to think about that whole business of growing up in the weeds. And in fact, the next parable in Matthew, when Jesus tells the parable of the seeds and soils, the next parable he tells is even called the parable of the weeds. And it has a slightly different point, but it's still about weeds and thorns and things. And Jesus says in that one, you know, he says, the farmers were going to plant this wheat field, and the enemy came, he said, and sowed weed seeds out there among the wheat seeds. And that parable is interesting because it's, and I'm going to come back to this a couple of times before we stop today. Part of the point of that parable is that you're going to have the weeds till the very last day. It isn't like we're going to ever live where there aren't any weeds. He says the workmen come and say, should we go in there and dig up all the weeds and tear all the weeds out of the field? He says, no, just leave them. We're going to have the weeds and we're going to have the wheat, and it'll be in the last day when the reapers come and they cut that down that they're going to be separating the weeds from the wheat. In the meantime, the wheat just going to have to get used to living with the weeds. It's an interesting thing to think about just within itself. Well, often when Jesus tells a parable or a story, sometimes we don't notice it immediately, but a lot of the time he's gotten something from the Old Testament that becomes the kind of trigger for that. And I found, I got fascinated with this whole weed thing, as you can see, and I thought, I wonder if the Old Testament ever talks about weeds, and I found a very interesting verse in Jeremiah chapter 4, and the third verse, it says, Jeremiah says, this is what God says to the people of Judah and to Jerusalem. Break up your unplowed ground and do not sow among thorns. don't sow among the weeds. Well, that's not quite the same point that Jesus made, but it does talk about sowing and about weeds. And I thought, you know, it's as Jesus so often does, he takes an idea in the Old Testament and then he builds it into something much bigger and more complex than it was originally. Well, in my contemplating the weeds, I went three different places, just things out of my own life that occurred to me that I want to share with you. One of them is just something very current. If you watch TV news, and you watch these commentators that talk to each other, talking heads we sometimes call them, and they have opinions about everything. And a phrase that I hear very often, well, besides starting sentences with the word so, but I won't get into that. I don't know where that came from, but you ask somebody a question and they say, so, which doesn't mean anything at all, but never mind, that's not relevant. But the phrase that I hear a lot is they'll say, well, without getting into the weeds. Have you heard that phrase? You hear a commentator say, well, I don't want to get into the weeds on this, they'll say. Or somebody starts making a rather complex explanation of something, somebody will say, well, you're just getting into the weeds. And it's an interesting phrase. It's been around for a long time. So I just went and did a little research. Where in the world did we start saying to get into the weeds? And I found out that we don't know. Some people say it comes from golf. You know, if you hit the golf ball the wrong place, you get it in the weeds, and it's a problem. If you get the golf ball in the weeds, it's a problem. It's hard to get back out of there when you get there. Some writers say that the place this phrase was used the most before TV commentators started using it was in restaurants. That when you got real busy back in the kitchen and could hardly keep up with the orders, they would say, we're really in the weeds tonight. And that's where the phrase. Now, I've had my own theory because I grew up in the Midwest in southern Missouri. And we used to go out and play in the yard. You know, the kids used to play outside instead of inside like they often do now. But the problem with playing outside was we got out into the weeds. And you got chiggers. Are there chiggers in California? I don't know if I don't think we have chiggers here. That's a shame. You really ought to experience chiggers. They're a tiny little red bug. And if a child gets out in the weeds and they come in, they'll just start breaking out these big round red welts, just one after the other. And they just get all over you, and they're awful. You just itch and you itch, and so when your mother saw you and saw you itching, she'd say, "You've been out in the weeds again, out there where the chiggers are." Well, wherever this phrase came from, being in the weeds is not a good place to be. That's my point. And so when Jesus said, the weeds can choke you. Well, that's just built on that long tradition of not being a good thing to be in the weeds. And then the other place I went is very far from that. You know, if you go to school a lot, like I have in my life, a lot of different schools will take a lot of different courses. I'm sorry to say, it's kind of frightening to say, that I've had whole courses, college, university level courses, that I don't remember a thing from them. I don't even remember who taught the course. I must have taken it because you had to have it to graduate. But other than that, I don't remember anything about it. But which makes it all the more unusual that I had this course at the University of Iowa in graduate school. And it's amazing how many things I still carry with me from that course. And it was a course on the writings and the thought of the little strange Danish philosopher named Soren Kierkegaard. And he's kind of hard to understand, and his books were kind of hard to understand. We studied those books, and he said so many things that are interesting. But I just want to go to one that immediately occurred to me when I started thinking about weeds and being in the weeds and being choked by the weeds. And I remember that Soren Kierkegaard had said, you know, a lot of people can go through their lives and they never face any of the real issues. For one thing, they never face the issue that their life is going to end someday. They are mortal. And they manage to live their whole lives and never really ever think about that. Or they don't think about their responsibility to the world they live in. Or they don't think about being grateful. Or they don't think about God and what God must be like and the nature of God and so on. And he said, you know how they're able to do that? Soren Kierkegaard said this in very complicated language, but this is what he was saying. The reason people can do that all the way through their life is they've worked out a little mechanism. Whenever a really serious question comes into their mind, they just turn up the volume of the world around them. They just get the stuff around them up real loud. And the noise distracts them from the question and they forget about it. And so they never have to really face it or never have to answer it. His words, among others on this, he said, it is difficult for a camel to go through the eye of a needle, and it's difficult for a man of the world to find stillness. Whether he is powerful or insignificant, it is difficult to find stillness in life's noise. That's just another way of saying you're in the weeds. There's just all of this stuff around, and it's choking you. It's keeping you from thinking about what you need to be thinking about. And so he says, we try to avoid these hard questions in our lives by distracting ourselves, as Kierkegaard puts it, with every shiny new thing. We distract ourselves with every shiny new thing. And so we can avoid reality by just turning up the volume. Well, I went there. And then I went someplace else. Claudette and I both went to Harding University in Arkansas as undergraduates. And I don't know if it's still true there or not. It's been a long time since we've been around there. But when we were there, it was known for singing. It was amazing to see. It just took a bunch of students from every kind of, all over the country and all kind of backgrounds and all kind of majors, but you got them together. We had to chapel every day or convocation or whatever you wanted to call it. And everybody would come in. There'd be over 1,000 students there. And the singing was magnificent. You had the feeling you were sitting right in the middle of the Mormon Tabernacle Choir or something, not just in a student body in a college, just whoever happened to be there. And the thing that particularly was striking to me was we sang not just dozens of songs, we sang hundreds of songs. I know our custom now, and I'm not just, I want to avoid just saying, well, in the good old days we did this and that, But I have noticed that nowadays we tend to sing 12 or 15 songs over and over again. They're good songs and they mean something to us and we sing them over and over again. Eventually we kind of get tired of them and then we have 10 or 15 other new ones that we do, and we do that sort of serially changing and then singing over and over again. Actually, what we did, I'm not saying it was any better, but we sang different songs, hundreds of different songs. And those things got stuck in my mind to the point that I sell them, even though we mostly don't use hymn books anymore, but I really don't need one. Because all those hundreds of songs in the hymn book, I pretty well know all of those words. I don't mean I sat down and memorized them. I mean they just got bored into my heart, you know, into my mind. And it's amazing how many times a situation will come up and I can immediately think of a line or a verse in a hymn that just fits that perfectly. Well, I thought of one when I was thinking about the weeds. This is an old 19th century English hymn, a beautiful hymn, beautiful not just for the music, but for the thoughts. And it's called in the hymn books, "O Jesus, I Have Promised." I don't know if any of you have ever seen that hymn before. You ought to look it up in an old hymn book sometime and see those words. But in the second verse of that hymn, there are a couple of phrases that have just stuck with me ever since. It begins like this. Oh, it's being spoken to Jesus, and it says, "Oh, let me feel thee near me. The world is ever near. I see the sights that dazzle, the tempting sounds I hear. My foes are ever near me, around me and within. But Jesus, draw thou nearer and shield my soul from sin." It's a picture of somebody that's in the weeds, and they know they're in the weeds, and they say, these things are closing in on me, you know? They're closing in on me. These sights, I'm not saying, oh, isn't that a horrible sight? I'm saying, that's a dazzling sight. And when I hear something, I don't say, oh, that's ugly. I say, no, that's tempting. The tempting sounds I hear. And so these distractions, these sights that dazzle, these tempting words, or as Kierkegaard said, the noise, turning up the noise, those are the weeds. And those are the weeds that are around us so much. Well, I want to spend just a few minutes now talking specifically about some of those distractions and about dealing with them, because they all are liable to choke us. Jesus mentioned two of them when he was telling these parables. He says that two of the things that can choke you, one of them is life's worries, and the other one is the deceitfulness of wealth. Those are the two that he mentions. Let me say a word about worries. The original word here that's translated life's worries doesn't mean necessarily worry, like I'm worried about whether I'm going to pass an exam or I'm worried about whether I'm going to be able to pay my bills. The Greek word has the meaning of something that has been separated out. It's like there are a lot of things out there, and I've pulled one of them out, and I'm making too much out of it. I'm overemphasizing it. I'm obsessing on it. That's what's carried by that word. When Jesus says life's worries, those things that have I'm not seeing that thing in its proper context. It's become too important to me, and I'm just belaboring it, you know. It's just on my mind, and I can't get it off. It's just real important to me, and it shouldn't be. That's what one of life's worries is. I need to be seeing the big picture. I need to not be obsessing on anything, because it's going to become that noise that leads me away from the Word. The Word can't germinate. I can't become mature when I get on that. We used to have the old expression, ride that hobby horse. When I just ride that hobby, I've just gotten it. It's just gotten hold of me. And I've got to get free from it. So life's worries. And the second one, he says, and the deceitfulness of riches. Now, look at that phrase very carefully. It's interesting that Jesus didn't say that riches are the weeds or the thorns. He said the deceitfulness of riches. That's the thing that's likely to choke you. We've lived in a lot of different contexts and around a lot of different people, and I've, particularly since we have been at Pepperdine and we've met some of these people that are, you know, big donors that can give away millions of dollars and so on. Sit at lunch with somebody that has $200 million or $300 million. And something I soon learned about that was that there are good people that have $300 million, and there are bad people that have $300 million. And there are good people that don't have a dime, and there are bad people that don't have a dime. And so it must not be the riches that is distinguishing the good people from the bad people. It's the deceitfulness of riches. And what we have learned in dealing with some of these people through the years is there are people who have not been deceived by the riches that they have been blessed with. They don't put them in the wrong place. They don't treat them with the wrong kind of respect. They don't let them become the noise that drowns out the more important questions in their life. And there are people like that. They're a joy to see when you see somebody like that. They've got enough money to do anything they want to, but they want to serve others. They're generous. They want to reach. So it's not so much riches. Now, there are some problems with riches, and if I'd been thinking about riches instead of weeds this week, I could talk to you about some of the problems that come with riches, because Jesus talked about them. Remember the rich young ruler. Because Jesus puts it this way here, I got to feel like the rich young ruler, probably his problem was not so much his riches, but he'd been deceived by them. He couldn't get rid of that deception, so he goes away sorrowfully. So there are two things that we got to be careful about when we're out in the weeds: the worries of this life and the deceitfulness of riches. Riches are going to tell you they can do things they can't. You're going to think, if I just could pay all my bills and then have a bunch left over, I'd live a happy life. Not necessarily. That's one of the deceits of riches. Have you ever read these stories about what happens to these people that win the lottery? It's not a pretty picture, the deceitfulness of riches. Now, I want to add to those two that Jesus talked about, two that people in Jesus' day didn't have to deal with, but we do. I don't say we have it harder than they did, but they didn't have to deal with these two. Well, the second one, maybe they did a little bit. The first one, I don't think he did. It's what I call the tyranny of technology. The tyranny of technology. People in Jesus' day didn't have to deal with that. I've been around long enough now that I actually remember a world in which there was not even television. We never had a television in our home. In fact, we never had a television in our home until I left to go to college. My parents got one, really upset me. We didn't have one the whole time I was growing up. But that part of that was because there weren't any. The first TV I ever saw, I saw in California. We came to visit friends, and we were in Ventura. And there on the main street in Ventura, I saw a bunch of people gathered around a window in a store, an appliance store or something. I went over there to look, and there was a television set. It was turned on, and there were two little puppies and snow. It was just going like that. But once in a while, you could see those two little puppies. And that was it. That was the first time I ever saw one of those things. But I remember my father calling my attention to a saying. And I later found out that this saying comes from the Syrian philosopher whose name is Khalil Gibran. And Khalil Gibran, he was actually talking about the lust for comfort. He says the problem with the lust for comfort is that stealthy thing enters the house as a guest and then becomes a host and then a master. And the point that was made about, now I know television is just one of many kinds of technology we have now. I know kids don't even watch television much anymore. They've got other screens that they look at. But when television first came, it entered the house as a guest. Once in a while, you turned it on and you watched some program. Then it became a host. That is, you had to organize the house and the family's activities around what was going to be on TV. And then it became a master. The program that was going to be on TV was more important than anything else, even going to church. We had these terrible struggles when some program you really wanted to see, and we particularly had that when we had Sunday night services, you know. And boy, it was very tempting to just stay home and watch TV. It had become our master. We had to go work with its schedule, not with our own. Well, now that's been multiplied in our technological world tremendously more than we had to deal with when all we had to deal with was a television set. Now we have all kinds of technology that is, some of it still at the guest stage. Some of it's already become the host. Some of it has become the master. I know it must be the master for some people because we find quite regularly when we drive around on campus at Pepperdine, some student walking right out in front of our car looking at their iPhone. And I think it must be more important than life itself. It has become the master. When that thing says look, you look. You know. Well, I guess I don't want to sound old-fashioned. I'm not. I like, you know, I love to play around with the computer and find things and all of that. And I like TV and I like all of that and so on. But on the other hand, when it becomes, when it endangers your life or when it even, when it destroys community, when you're not interacting with anybody anymore, you're interacting with the screen. Another thing we do, we drive by the bus stops on campus, and there will be 40 or 50 students waiting for the bus, and none of them are saying anything to each other. They're all looking like this. And I think, you know, those people around you have wonderful stories. They're wonderful people. It would be great to talk to them, to get to know them, to share your lives with them. But your master there is saying, no, you pay attention to me. I'm just saying that technology belongs to the weeds. It belongs to the weeds. And if you pull it out and you start emphasizing it, and it starts overcoming everything else, it's the kind of noise that overcomes the serious questions in life. So that's one. Now, the second one I guess people have always had, and I don't know why I'm noticing it more now than I used to, but we live in a culture in which we are seeing the disappearance of civility and of good taste. Now, I don't want to sound like a Puritan, and I don't, my ears don't burn if I hear a bad word, okay? I don't want people to change their behavior because I'm around. I don't want to leave a wrong impression about this, but I just want to say that I hear people say things to one another that I don't recall as a child people said to one another. Just being unkind, just yelling at one. And you see these little clips where somebody pulls in front of somebody else and the person behind jumps out of their car, runs up there and punches the other person right in the face. Don't we call that road rage? Where did that come from? Road rage. When did we start doing these kinds of things to each other, talking that way to each other? Now, I'm not saying this just to say, oh, me, oh, my, isn't the world going to the dogs. I'm saying that these are weeds because if you're just in a culture in which people have that kind of attitude and they're talking to one another that way, it's very hard to hear the word of God over that kind of noise. It's very hard. And the reason I put that part in about good taste is because the same thing happens. It gets harder and harder to say something that's harsh enough that people will pay any attention to it. And fortunately, it gets harder and harder to say something that's dirty enough to get people to pay attention to it. Now, I know that words and swearing and obscenity, that's relative. If you go back and study language, you'll find that, say, in Shakespeare's time, there were words that were considered to be really obscene. And we don't even think of them as being obscene anymore. So every generation has its own set of words that it considers to be obscene, you know. But when the obscenities begin to press down on the language and on the communication that we have with each other, it functions like weeds, like thorns. And the lack of civility and the lack of good taste and the insults and the obscenity. It's, by the way, I don't want to dwell on this point, but it's another interesting thing to me about swearing. You know, swearing is different from obscenity in the sense that, you know, swearing is something used to say, I really mean it. But what we call swear words, if you look back 100 years, almost all swear words were religious. They had something to do with God or Jesus or something, because that was what everybody considered the thing that was the most significant thing. And so you used that as a way of saying, I'm serious about this. It's very interesting to me now, just watching television and watching movies and hearing people talk to each other, that almost all of our obscenities now have either to do with sex or with some bodily function. That's interesting. But does that mean those are the things that we feel all of life is based on? We used to think it was God and Jesus, and now we think it's those things. I don't know. I'm not trying to draw a conclusion about that. I'm just saying it's interesting how the language has sort of gone there. But at any rate, it's very difficult to think about the serious questions and to think about the Word of God when you're surrounded by those kinds of things that I've just listed there. Now, the passage that came to my mind when I thought about thinking about the right sorts of things was the one I'm sure is very familiar to you, but let's just put it in this context that I've been talking to you about today. Philippians 4 and verse 8. Finally, brothers and sisters, whatever is true, whatever is noble, whatever is right, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is admirable, if anything is excellent or praiseworthy, think about such things. Yeah, what better advice on how to get out of the weeds? What better advice on how to get out of the weeds? I know you already know that verse, but let's just really let that one sink in. I'm going to read it one more time. Finally, brothers and sisters, whatever is true, whatever is noble, whatever is right, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is admirable, if anything is excellent, if anything is praiseworthy, think about such things. So Jesus said, let your yea be yea, let your nay be nay. Keep it simple. Keep your eye on the significant, the really significant things. Remember, there's wheat and there are weeds, and you're the wheat. Thank you very much.